Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Matt Harvin, and I'm hyped today to be joined by someone I consider to be one of my good pals, JJ Zacharyson, editor-in-chief of NumberFire and FanDuel, but more importantly, the host of the Late Round Podcast. JJ, dude, what's going on?
What's up, man? I am honored to be doing... Is this your first show since turning the big 3-0? Is this it?
Yes, this is the first... I recorded a bunch of Fearless Forecast videos for Yahoo this morning, but this is my first like podcast. The Fearless Forecast videos will just be seen by like angry people that play our game and had never heard of me, but will see my Twitter handle and like tweet angry things at me, you know, that are when I'm wrong or whatever about Brandon Ayuk. So yeah, this is much more comfortable for me here.
I feel you. Well, I'm honored that I know that you purposely chose me to be the first podcast guest of your in your 30s. So I appreciate that. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, after Sigmund Bloom, Adam Levitan, Evan Silva, Matthew Berry, everybody else said no, I figured you were might as well be a good fallback option.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Anyways, we got some serious business to talk about today on the show because we're going to get into player projections, which is a subject that I love to talk about. We might nerd out a little bit here, but we will also get into like some specific players, teams that have really challenged us via our projections process. But first, we do have to cover some news. Most importantly, the Colts season from hell absolutely continues. I mean, it was kind of a tough look to bank on Carson Wentz anyways. Like, this is our plan, right? Like, our plan is we're just going to rehab Carson Wentz. But that already went wrong. Obviously, we know he has a foot injury. Now, sort of one of the biggest keys to their ecosystem being the reason that Carson Wentz was going to have a bounce back season is now thrown into flux because Quentin Nelson is getting the same foot surgery or a foot surgery. He has the same weird and wild 5 to 12 week timetable, which it's just absurd. Like 5 to 12 weeks. I think Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, even was like, yeah, that's ridiculous of a timetable. Anyways, he's out for 5 to 12 weeks, whatever that means. ESPN's Chris Mortensen says the Colts are not considering trading for a backup like Foles, Minshew, or Mariota. They're just going to go with what's in house. JJ, what the hell, dude? What's going on with the Colts? How are you reacting to this news? And I know you're a guy that was really in on Michael Pittman this year, too, as a potential breakout candidate. How much has this Wentz injury and now this subsequent Nelson injury news changed your forecast for this team?
Yeah, I mean, look, it definitely is not a good thing that this is happening. I mean, especially the Quentin Nelson thing, you know, regarding like a Jonathan Taylor, you know, it's just another bump down for Taylor because the offense in general just isn't going to be as efficient. It's just crazy that apparently these foot injuries are contagious, not just COVID around this whole locker room. It's crazy that it's the exact same injury, evidently. But, you know, I would say this, the fact that they are reportedly not going after a Foles, a Mariota, a Gardner Minshew, which, you know, I don't know if they would get a Gardner Minshew because it's in the division. But, you know, regardless, the fact that they're not going after that, maybe they feel like this is going to be sort of on the earlier side of that timetable and be more of like a 5 to 7 week injury, which in that case, you know, you were looking at Carson Wentz being back then towards, you know, maybe like week 2, week 3, and it's not as big of a deal. I mean, I would say it's the biggest deal about this is that this is a new team. He needs to get on the same page with his receivers. And now he's not going to be there for the preseason and the rest of camp. So that's an issue for sure. But maybe they feel like they can get through these first couple of weeks, you know, with an Easton under center. And, you know, if they go 0-3, if they go 0-2, you know, hopefully Carson Wentz can come back and they can bounce back a little bit. First 5 weeks of the season are not easy either for this Colts team. So that's another thing to keep in mind that, you know, we can't just automatically give them a W if Carson Wentz were to be under center. You know, regarding the players on that team, you know, you and I both like Michael Pittman as a player, potential breakout this year. I think that this is one of those scenarios where, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more hesitant to probably draft Jonathan Taylor, but I was already a little bit hesitant to draft Jonathan Taylor where he was going just because of the receiving work that he was projected to see in the offense. But with Michael Pittman, I mean, he was already, you know, like a fringe top 10 round guy. And then if he drops a lot and drops significantly, you know, we know that wide receiver talent can elevate in bad situations just in general, more so than like a running back, let's say. And so if he falls even further, then it's going to be a almost free dart throw to get a guy like Pittman who checks a lot of boxes for me, at least, as a potential breakout this year. So I might still be drafting Michael Pittman as long as his ADP sort of drops with the news of Nelson and Carson Wentz.
Which you would assume it was, or at the very least is not going to take that like potential jump up that it would have with like the hype building and training camp or whatever. Cause that was those news items were starting to trickle in that, oh, he's having a great camp. In addition to the fact that you like him, I like him as a player. So yeah, I think I'm with you in that, like, he was already kind of in that range where I thought the biggest appealing part of his ADP was that the fact that Carson Wentz might just stink was sort of already priced in to that ADP. It was already baked in. And so, yeah, like maybe Jacob Eason stinks. Like, and they're just like, neither one of them is good, but the volume is still there. The role is still there and the ability is still there to the point that, like, okay, so if you burn a 10th round pick, who cares, right? Like on Michael Pittman, it's not, what are you really doing there anyways? He's still a guy that I'm drafting, probably just not aggressively. Like I did bump him down one tier just to reflect the fact that, like, now he's not a guy that I'm like, I'm stamping every like ninth or 10th round or something like that, that I want to keep hammering him in that range. There's obviously much more risk to it. So I think we're on the same page. Just on your Jonathan Taylor thoughts too, because I think I'm probably on the same page as you as well. Just in reaction to this news, I bumped him back to like the end of my second tier of running backs. Would you rather have a guy like, I don't know, Antonio Gibson or Joe Mixon ahead of Jonathan Taylor right now?
I still think I'm leaning Taylor, only because, you know, the way that we, and of course we're going to be talking about projections and stuff, but the way that he projects out might not look as good as what his ceiling truly is. Whereas some of these other guys, the guys that you mentioned, I'm high on, so it's a little bit difficult. You know, I love Antonio Gibson. I love the ceiling that he brings. I love the ceiling that Mixon could bring without Gio Bernard in that offense. But with Jonathan Taylor, you know, he was being projected the way he was being projected. And that was with the assumption that Nyheim Hines was still seeing a lot of work in that backfield as a receiver. I mean, that's just how good Jonathan Taylor is. And the fact that he had an opportunity, a real opportunity, I think he still technically does, to jump into the top tier of running backs this year if he sees, you know, more receiving work. I just, I think that this news, you have to bump him down a little bit, though. And I wouldn't fault anyone for drafting a Gibson or a Mixon over him at this point. But I think I'm still going to have Taylor over those guys, you know, entering the draft.
Yeah, that's like exactly how I broke it down to myself this morning, too, is that I was really weighing, do I ding Taylor an entire tier and then put him behind Gibson? I was like, I'm still going to probably take Jonathan Taylor ahead of Joe Mixon. Like, there's plenty of risk there with Mixon, even if all things work out well. But yeah, Gibson was a tough one for me, man, because I'm so excited about Washington. But at the same time, I was like, all right, let's stay a little conservative for now and keep Jonathan Taylor there. So neither one of us, I guess, is freaking out about the Colts right now, but you're definitely pricing in some of the obvious negativity that all of this brings. Yeah, it's tough that, like, I remember reading the story right before camp opened that they were very concerned, the Colts were, about their vaccination rates, like the fact that some of the leaders on their team, this was in The Athletic, I think it was Zach Kiefer that wrote the story, you know, that some of their team leaders were not vaccinated or whatever. And it's like, now they have so many other things to be concerned about. Yeah, it's not a great time. Not a great time in Indy right now. Not a great time for Joe Judge. I don't know that there's any fantasy takeaways in this story, but I this is an interesting offense to project. So maybe we can let this lead us into our projection discussion. Joe Judge is pissed. Actually, livid was the correct word. So I'm editorializing there with pissed. He was livid that a big fight broke out at Giants camp today. And I mean, Daniel Jones at the bottom of the pile made the team do a 100-yard sprint, a bunch of push-ups, which I love it. Love the energy there from old Joe Judge. Probably a more important note, Kenny Golladay left practice with a leg injury. Not much is known beyond that. But where were you at with this Giants offense in general? Because I have a tough time not really I love the skill position talent theoretically. Mm-hmm. But man, it's still Daniel Jones, who has like an absurd amount of turnovers in his first 2 years. Yeah. And Jason Garrett at the controls here. And apparently they're all fighting with each other and Joe Judge making them do pushups. So what's the deal with the Giants, JJ?
Yeah. You know, when the tweet came out about this fight, I quote tweeted that original tweet. I can't remember who it was from, but I quote tweeted it and said that Daniel Jones just seems to always find a way to get sacked. You know, it's just, this is just another instance of that happening. Highest sack rate in the league since he entered the NFL. Fumbles all the time.
The question is, did he fumble at the bottom of this pile? Like, did anyone report on the potential fumble situation at the bottom of this pile?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's interesting. If you want to look at this from a half glass full perspective with the Giants, one of the things that you could look at is that they're a positive regression candidate, which isn't really a thing. They're regressing positively. They're regressing back to a mean that's better than where they were last year. From a touchdown standpoint, where they didn't score many touchdowns last year. They weren't very good at converting there, which makes sense because, you know, they got off to a really, really slow start. Daniel Jones was banged up. You know, they didn't have Saquon Barkley. I mean, there's reasons why, you know, they weren't that strong offensively. You know, both of us like Kenny Galladay as a player. And I think it's one of those situations where, you know, having a true X in that offense can really take that offense to the next level, hypothetically. And I'm sort of in the same boat as you, where I love all of these skill position players individually. And I think that they all fit together really, really well in that offense.
Really well.
It just comes down to Daniel Jones and how you feel about Daniel Jones and if you're bullish on him. Now, I sort of approach fantasy and approach this kind of stuff from the perspective of beating the market. And so if everyone's down on Daniel Jones, which I think everyone should be down on him, just generally speaking, just because we don't see big leaps and bounds from these quarterbacks after we see a year or two of production from them. You know, Ryan Tannehill situations don't happen very often. Josh Allen situations don't happen very often at all. And so we should be banking on Daniel Jones not being the answer, not being great. With that being said, that's all priced into ADP. That's all right there. So you can, from a fantasy perspective, you can sort of angle this and say, well, I think that, you know, there's obviously a chance and people are giving him no chance. So maybe we should buy into this Giants offense at least a little bit. So I don't necessarily mind doing that, but I'm pretty neutral on the offense in general because it's just really hard to buy into Daniel Jones right now.
Yeah. And again, if this was Daniel Jones with a Brian Daboll, you know, that was going to be progressive about how they call plays.
Exactly.
And, you know, a lot of motion, play action, spread the field out, whatever. But like, again, it's damn Jason Garrett. You know, like my biggest problem with the Kadarius Toney pick, and I know you were out on this pick as well, was like, not that I think Kadarius Toney is definitely not going to work out. I think there's probably a better. Also, by the way, talk about not good headlines with old Kadarius Toney there. Like, a lot of not good. Not good there either. But at the same time, like, in a theoretical world where he comes in, like, has a good offseason and learns the receiver position and blah, 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 blah. It'd be great if it was like someone other than Jason Garrett carving up that role for him, you know?
Right,
again,
exactly.
It just comes back to the Garrett thing that really brings me the biggest pause. But I do agree in that it was very profitable to be sort of ahead of the field with Josh Allen last year. I do not think Daniel Jones is going to have a Josh Allen type of season. I'd almost give it like a 2% chance that happens, maybe even lower than that. But something sort of to the equivalent where he's probably not going to be like, you probably could have won your league just because you took Josh Allen or Stephon Diggs. I do not think they might outkick expectations, Daniel Jones, right, Kenny Galladay, and all these guys, but I doubt there was like a league winning potential there with this offense.
Yeah. And I would say this, like, I think right now, like, just if you look at projections and if you look at where these guys are going, you know, like Saquon, for instance, is still one of the few running backs in the NFL that is going to have that true workhorse workload. And now he's at this cost because of this injury that he's been dealing with. He's at this cost where it's even more attractive to go after him and get him. And then on top of that, people are fading him a little bit more because the offense that he's in, he's on the Giants, et cetera. Kenny Galladay's still in that spot where, like, there's the opportunity cost is still kind of significant because there are a lot of good wide receivers going around him. So I've been more attracted to just saying, I'm just going to get Sterling Shepard, who is good. And we know is going to play a pretty solidified role in that offense. As long as we assume that Kadarius Toney continues down the path that he's going down right now, at least for his rookie season. I mean, my expectations for Toney weren't very high in general, but especially year one, because I thought there was going to be a little bit of a learning curve there. And so when it comes to Sterling Shepard, we know that he can play the slot very, very well. And if he's there a lot this year, given what they have a wide receiver, which he should be, I think that there's a lot to be gained there from a value standpoint with Sterling Shepard. So I like Saquon at his decreased price right now. And I really like Sterling Shepard as sort of a late round dart throw. Someone, especially like if you're going best ball or something, someone who is going to give you some production that you're getting late that a lot of people just don't see as a very sexy pick.
I love Sterling Shepard. I mean, I've always loved Sterling Shepard, the player. So like, let this be the year, like, for once.
Yeah.
Honestly, he just needs to stay healthy. That's exactly the biggest thing with him. Yeah. So let's end on that positive note there, which I did not pay Jay to say that. So we've mentioned projections a lot. So let's just dive right in them. Before we get into sort of the specifics and like kind of get into, you know, players or teams or whatever, sort of give us like the elevator pitch for why you think doing projections are so helpful and why you do them.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people have this idea that people who build projections and who are really good at them, and there are a lot of people in the industry who are very, very good at building projections and who are very, very precise with them. I think there's this idea that we're using projections as analysts to sort of be the foundation for all of our takes and all of our feelings about situations and players. I don't necessarily see it that way. I'm a super data-driven analyst, as you know, but I don't view the projection building process as one being sort of this foundational piece for all of my analysis. I view it more so as you're building them out and as you're looking at the team level stuff and the player level stuff, you're starting to understand situations better for these individual players. And that to me is the most helpful and most important piece of projection building. I mean, at the end, you're going to get a number and that number is going to say, this is how many fantasy points this guy's projected to score. And sometimes you're going to be surprised by that number and sometimes you're not. And that can also dictate, you know, how you might feel about a player. But to me, it's the journey and the process of building the projection itself that will really allow you to grasp the whole league a lot better, as opposed to kind of looking at each of these individual players in a very micro way.
Yeah, I think too, as an analyst, it helps keep me honest, like mm-hmm. both on like the positive and negative side. Because it's like, sure, I love Elijah Moore, the player, or even like Sterling Shepard, great example. Like, I love Sterling Shepard, but how many targets can I really give him this year? And while also being realistic to the rest of the offense, other times it's, you know, I might not like this player this much, but man, they project out really well. You know, when you put them through just a basic system there. Like, I think that's probably the biggest thing, is it keeps us within like certain boundaries. But at the same time, and I know you say this a lot, and I think this is important for other people to hear, you're not just going to take your projections and like be like, these are my rankings.
No.
You know, like, no, that's bad. Like, because, and I think for me personally, it's like a range of outcomes basically too, right? Like Jonathan Taylor was a great example that he might project out to be your RB13 or something like that. If you just give him, again, share of the team's rush attempts, share of the team's targets, whatever, but you know that there's a bigger ceiling there. So I don't know. I think that's a big, not only does it help keep us honest, it also just sort of like, you don't just take your projections and then dole out your rankings that way, because there's more subjectivity to it than that.
Right. Yeah. You're looking at, with a projection, you're looking at a median outcome, right? You're looking at what's the most likely thing to happen in this offense based on all of these inputs that you hopefully strategically and logically put together, right? And so a lot of times, you know, that median outcome doesn't capture the true variance of a certain player. And especially when you get to the later rounds of your draft, you really should be only striving for, I would argue you should be striving for the higher end of that variance regardless, right? And so, you know, whether you're in the early, middle, or late rounds, you should sort of always be looking at what that ceiling for that player truly, truly is. And being reasonable about that, right? Like, we're not saying like, you know, like J.K. Dobbins, for instance, like we're not saying, oh, but what if J.K. Dobbins sees a 25% target share in the Ravens offense? Then he'll see enough targets as a receiver, to be more viable. But, you know, we're not saying that. We're saying maybe like a 75th, 80th percentile outcome for these guys. If you can look at it from that perspective, it can go a long way. And projections don't always capture that. And if you're in the later rounds, you know, like, again, a guy like Sterling Shepard, you know, I mentioned that he's probably a better best ball pick than a regular season long type of pick. And the main reason for that is because you're guaranteeing production in some way from a guy like Sterling Shepard. But I know factually, well, I shouldn't say factually, but with like 95% confidence that Sterling Shepard's not going to be a league winning player this year, right? Like the chance that that happens is very, very low. And so from that perspective, is he the best late round pick from a season long perspective? Maybe not, but I know that if I don't have to predict that weekly output, and I know that he's going to walk into 80 to 100 targets or more, he's a lot easier to draft in a best ball format just because that production is going to be there. So I would argue, like, it depends on the format too. Like if you're working with best ball and you're playing best ball, I think projections are actually a little bit more helpful than if you're not, because in a best ball format, you're trying to find these like later round picks who are still going to give you some production and give you a handful of usable weeks. Whereas in a season long format where you actually have to pick who to start and find who those players who are seeing that volume really are, you know, you have to look at the higher ceiling a little bit more.
Yeah, in best ball formats, when like Tyrell Williams is going in the same range as guys like who might play 100 snaps this year.
Yeah, you know? right. Exactly.
Like, is there any real reason to draft Tyrell Williams in like a season long league? Probably not.
Probably not.
I mean, you could chase some weeks on the waiver wire, whatever. Right. But probably no real reason to do that. But in a best ball league, yeah, if you want to get like your 17th round pick, if you want him to get like 700, 800 yards, sure. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure Tyrell Williams will have 3 or 4 top 24 weeks this year. But do you know when those are going to happen? No, probably not.
0%. Yeah. 0% shot I know when those weeks are going to right? Totally. And running back, I think, is an even better example because these, like, little pass catchers, you know, the J.D. McKissicks or the James Whites of the world, probably project out a lot better than, I don't know, A.J. Dillon or, like, Alexander Mattison or something. But in what world are you going to draft J.D. McKissic over those guys? Hopefully not one that exists in this reality.
Right.
So
yeah,
that one helps a lot too with running backs.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, cool. So let's get into some, that's enough like big time nerd talk that, you know, maybe 10 people care about, but I think is important like as a foundation for why projections are important, why it's not the end all be all, even if you love doing, and I really do like enjoy the process every year. I'm probably not as like nitty gritty as some people out there. Definitely probably not even as much as yourself, but I do enjoy the process every year. And I think it teaches me a lot about the league overall, like you mentioned, and specific teams, and definitely about specific players. Let's get into some more specific situations. Who would you say are some teams that were really difficult for you to project? And I'll offer some as well if we don't like agree.
Okay. So the one that popped my head first with this was Jacksonville. And, you know, the main reason is I don't know if Urban Meyer is good. I don't know. I don't at some point you have to take a step back and, you know, of course, coach speak is coach speak and the things that they're doing, you know, like the Travis Etienne stuff that, you know, that was the big storyline like in June and May even. And they were like, oh, they're lining Travis Etienne up as a slot guy and they're going to line him up out wide and this and that. It's like, why wouldn't they do that? Actually, like, it's not a bad idea because we know that running back is not the most difficult position in the NFL. Not that I can do it, but that it's not the most difficult position for these guys to translate into play. So why not get him to be an all around great wide receiver as well and utilize his versatility? So like that kind of stuff made sense. What didn't make as much sense is the fact that they drafted Travis Etienne in the first place in a rebuilding team and you're going after a running back. So like, the actions that they've taken, even like signing Tim Tebow, like, what are you doing here? Right. And like the actions that they're taking, not the words that they're saying, those are the things that make me think that Urban Meyer might, and that whole staff just might not be that sharp. And so that's a little bit alarming and scary from a projection building standpoint, but from a projection building standpoint, they have decent pieces like Trevor Lawrence, obviously coming out as the best prospect since Andrew Luck. And we saw Andrew Luck have a really good rookie season from a fantasy perspective, lots of volume. They have good wide receivers there or good enough wide receivers there and a good group. And then the backfield is strong too. So you have these pieces for fantasy that could do something, but you know, there's this dissonance of what is this team even going to look like generally? And then is their coaching staff even very good? So that just makes them have, it's just a high variance profile, in my opinion, from a projection standpoint.
Yeah, that's all like, all of that is really good points, like, because I think that you don't, there's such an unknown here with Urban Meyer, even if like Daryl Bevel is a coordinator that I actually kind of think is underrated and can put together a pretty good offense. You just don't know how much, like, Urban Meyer's clearly going to have his fingerprints all over the situation. I mean, they signed damn Tim Tebow, like you mentioned, right? Like that's problematic. So there is that. Also, I think getting the distribution right, even like forget it from a team level standpoint, the distribution between these Jags players is really tough. Backfield, obviously, but among the pass catchers, like what does this coaching staff, like I think that one of the most like ADP corrections that need to take place is like, I think the Jacksonville receivers have got to come closer together. Like the fact that Marvin Jones is, I don't know, barely like on the redraft radar, but Chart goes in like the 7th round doesn't really make sense to me. Cause I think like from a projection standpoint, I had those guys a lot closer together.
Yeah.
Because I think that just, I think the distribution could be pretty even between these three receivers. Like Chenault's probably fine where he's going at this point, but I definitely think the gap's got to close there between those two guys. And so again, like they're difficult from a team level and an individual player level.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough. And it's one of those situations, you know, I've done studies over the last, throughout July, I did studies on finding breakout wide receivers and running backs. And for both the running back position and the wide receiver position, what I found was that if you're looking after round five, and, you know, I had my way of defining breakout player, which was essentially players who outperformed ADP expectation, which was derived from looking at a trend line from looking at ADP versus points scored. But regardless, guys who outperformed ADP expectation by 100 or more points that were drafted after round five, those were any breakout player at those positions. And so if you look at that, we're actually pretty good at projecting which player, whether it's a wide receiver or a running back, is going to be the best player on their team when looking at a breakout. So at the running back position, this is what I dubbed the ambiguous RB1 theory, which is the worst name imaginable for any sort of theory in fantasy football. But basically, like, in the if you have...
There's no hashtag on that one. There's no hashtag.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. But if you have, like, two middle round running backs, if you have a round six to round nine running back, and you have two of them on the same team. So a good example this season, Arizona. So it's Chase Edmonds and James Conner. So often analysts like us sit there and oh, we'll just get the cheaper guy. We'll just get James Conner because he's going, you know, two or three rounds after Chase Edmonds. And it's just that that's a better value. Well, what I found was that it's astronomically better to go after the RB1 in that backfield. Their hit rate is insanely good. And so, and I found the same thing for wide receivers, where if they're the wide receiver one being drafted from their team in those middle rounds, they generally have a much higher hit rate. So, you know, ADP is going to fluctuate. And there's going to be situations like right now with like Denver with Cortland Sutton versus Jerry Jeudy. And, you know, I think Judy's going to end up being ahead of Sutton by a significant enough margin by the time like mid to late August hits. But, you know, this is one of those situations where like I'm being pulled in this direction of what history has told us, what the market has said with DJ Chark. And then and the other, my brain is saying, you know, this is not the logical thing to do because all of these target shares should be projected a lot closer together than what their ADP is saying right now. So I'm with you. Like, I'm not into DJ Chark where he's being drafted. I would much rather get a Marvin Jones, but that's typically not the best process in these kinds of situations.
Well, I love that because it's, again, sort of brings in a different way than what we're talking about with projections where, like, you have to check yourself, like, because... I agree with you 100%. Like, my brain is saying like this should be a lot closer than it is, but if history is also telling us this is
right,
really the way things are going to go, it's basically just like don't get too confident in your own ability to be correct here. So like if Chark falls to a certain point, even though I'm not into him, I might draft him, or I might just not go, like, I'm not going to go ham on Marvin Jones or Laviska Shenault. It's just basically like there's enough ambiguity in this situation to be kind of open to anything happening. And that's the only reason that I think like Chark might need to come down a little bit. These other guys might need to go up a little bit. The ADP gap does seem a little aggressive on it. But again, history would tell us that Chark is probably the guy that is going to break out here. I want to offer up one team that was definitely tough for me to project. There's two that stand out to me right away. But number one, it's, and I feel like I say this on every podcast, I'm sure my producer, Brett, is rolling his eyes right now as I say this for the 100th time. Guess what, Brett? It's going to happen like 15 more times before kickoff happens. 49ers are like the key, I think, to figuring out fantasy football in 2021.
Yeah.
Because number one, a lot of good, exciting players. Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Debo Samuel. Hell yeah. Trey Sermon could be like a league-winning running back. I feel like he might fall somewhere in this like ambiguous running back theory that you you know, so aptly named there. They've got an exciting rookie young quarterback, a coordinator that we all really like. But there's about like 15 different paths this team could go down, right? Like when and if Trey Lance does take over, and like I don't need to hear about what Kyle Shanahan says right now about when, like, oh, it really surprised me if he's the week one starter, because then he just gets to say like, well, I was pleasantly surprised when he's the week one starter, right? Like at some point Trey Lance is going to play, and that's going to change the entire distribution of this offense from like an overall volume perspective and potentially an individual volume perspective. JJ, what the hell do we do with the 49ers this year?
Yeah. And here's the crazy thing about that, because I love Trey Lance. I have Trey Lance everywhere. Like, I want him to start. I think that he could break fantasy football in a similar way that we saw Lamar Jackson break fantasy football. But I will say this, from a 2021 standpoint, you can make the argument, and this is going to sound insane, but you can make the argument that Jimmy Garoppolo is better for this offense than the skill players if you're ignoring quarterback from a fantasy perspective. If you're looking at wide receiver, tight end with George Kittle and the running backs there, you could easily make the argument that Jimmy Garoppolo is a better person for them to have under center for them to thrive. And the main reason I say that is, you know, when we're building these projections, you're looking at it from a top down perspective, usually, where you're building out, you know, team projections to get overall volume, and you're looking at pass rush rates and all that kind of stuff. And then you get volume, and then you're divvying up that volume based on target share, rush share, et cetera. And so with the 49ers, number one, they're probably going to be a very run heavy team, not only because that's what we've seen historically with this team with Shanahan, but also they have the easiest schedule in the NFL when you're looking at team win totals and projecting out that way. The 49ers have a cakewalk schedule, especially the beginning of the season. So that's one reason why we can be confident that they're going to be fairly run heavy, but that's about the only place where I think you can be kind of confident when you're projecting this team. But when it comes to like I did a study earlier this offseason on rookie quarterbacks and how they affect their pass catchers on their team. We have not over the last decade seen a rookie quarterback play more than half of his team's snaps. There's been like 29 of them, and have multiple players on his team, multiple pass catchers on his team, be relevant in fantasy football. The only one that's come close is Andrew Luck. And that was off of insane volume, right? That was just crazy, crazy volume that we know we're not going to see in San Francisco. So that's a little bit scary. And then on top of that, I did a study on looking at mobile quarterbacks, and mobile quarterbacks usually don't have as good of numbers for their receivers as well, and their running backs actually, because a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're gobbling up all of those fantasy points and all of that, all those yards and touchdowns, et cetera, for themselves. And a lot of times those teams are naturally a little bit more run heavy. And so there's not as much volume to go around for these pass catchers. And so my take on this has generally been, if you like George Kittle this year, you shouldn't like Brandon Ayuk this year. If you like Brandon Ayuk this year, then you should probably be a little bit down on George Kittle this year. I'm not saying that Kittle would be irrelevant if Brandon Ayuk becomes a true wide receiver 2+ from a fantasy perspective, but I do think that you should not be drafting Kittle at ADP if you're drafting Brandon Ayuk at ADP. And so I agree with you from a projection standpoint. It's a very, very difficult team to project. So the way that I'm sort of approaching this is that we know Jimmy Garoppolo is not the best quarterback in the world. So we know that it's unlikely that we're going to see like 3-4 studs coming from this offense if Jimmy G's under center. So we should make the assumption that the quarterback situation won't be unreal for fantasy this year. I think that Trey Lance is an incredible future, really bright future, and he could dominate next year and beyond. It's just that what we've seen historically from rookie quarterbacks, and he's a little bit of a raw prospect. I mean, let's be real. It's not a big sample size with Trey Lance. He's fun and I love him. And I want him to start just to get him and start Trey Lance and just capture all of that with San Francisco. But I just want to be realistic and see that no matter who's under center, I don't think it's the most like advantageous offense, despite how good those skill position players are. Like, I love George Kittle, obviously. Brandon Ayuk had an unbelievable rookie season, and he's a star in the making. Debo Samuel's so good. I mean, they have these players, and it's just one of those things where you have this divide between how you're viewing them as from a skill perspective and talent perspective versus what literally every number is sort of like screaming at you and saying. And it's saying that this is not an offense that is likely to produce, you know, multiple stars from a fantasy perspective.
Yes. And by the way, I have a Discord channel. And if you'd think that exact Trey Lance, like rookie quarterback, like podcast of yours has not been thrown in this disc. Have you heard this? Have you heard this? Yes. Pals. I'm aware of who JJ Zachary is. I've read the stories, heard the podcasts. I know. But you know, so your name has been brought up in the Discord several times about Brandon Ayuk specifically. Yes. And I am ahead of consensus on Ayuk this year, which is tough to reflect in ranking. And this is I would love to rail on rankings here for
Oh my god, hours, I could do that for 4 hours. Yeah,
despite the fact 2020 champ, shout out to me, officially defeated rankings forever. We don't do them anymore. They're dead in the industry because I've vanquished them. But it's tough to reflect in rankings because can you realistically rank George Kittle as like tight end 5?
No.
Like in what world would you want to present to somebody, here are my tight end rankings, I've got TJ Hockenson and Mark Andrews or Kyle Pitts ahead of George Kittle? That doesn't, you just wouldn't, that's silly, right?
It's silly.
It's very easy to reflect, like, I want you to draft Brandon Ayuk because I've got him at like wide receiver 21 or something like that, or 20, right, which is at least a few spots ahead of his positional ADP. It's easy to reflect one thing, not so easy to reflect the other. Even if that's like inherently, though, if you've got Kittle at 3 and Waller at 2, you're kind of trying to communicate that. But yeah, in no way can both of these guys really hit their ADP or way out kick it to the point that it was great to draft them.
Right, right. But it's okay. It's okay to have your rankings reflect something that is almost a lock to not be reality because you're playing probability in some way, yeah, right? You're not necessarily saying that George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk are going to outperform ADP expectation. You're just saying this is what's going on. You know, like I'm open to the fact that, you know, yeah, we love Brandon Ayuk. We think Brandon Ayuk is really good. You like him more than I do, probably from a fantasy perspective this season. But you're still open to the fact that there's a very real possibility that George Kittle is gobbling up this like 28% target share in the offense, and yes, Brandon Ayuk ends up seeing a 21%. And if it's a 21% target share, it's highly unlikely that he's going to be like this true plug and play. He's probably going to be more of a wide receiver 3 than a wide receiver 2 plus, right?
Yep, a lot of variance there.
Yeah. And so like you're open to that, but it can still, that doesn't necessarily have to be reflected so precisely in rankings, which is again, another reason why the rankings piece is so difficult because it doesn't give you that context, doesn't give you that nuance. It's really kind of annoying from that perspective, but I still think it's okay. The one thing I would say is that hopefully, like if you're looking at like, for instance, my overall rankings, like I've gotten people hit me up and they're like, why is there such a massive gap between Darren Waller and George Kittle? Because I have Waller significantly ahead of Kittle in my overall rankings. And it's because, you know, I'm weighing this idea that Trey Lance starts a lot this season. And the fact that if that's the case, and I like Brandon Ayuk, and I think I have Brandon Ayuk basically like at ADP, maybe like one spot lower or something like that. It's not anything significant. Sure. And so if I'm expecting Ayuk to be decent, then it's harder for me to expect George Kittle to be decent outside of the context of just the tight end position. And so that I think is where you can at least play with that a little bit. But yeah, this is just an example of why rankings are kind of trash.
Yeah, but don't say nice things about overall rankings because they don't make me do overall rankings. Don't say that. But it is funny too. I mean, as much as I love, and again, to people who are like, saw my initial rankings, like, wait, Ayuk is only 21. I'm like, listen, that is being conservative. Like that is being aggressive. That is me putting some optimism on it. But you know, you can't like rank him ahead of some of these guys that are going ahead of him because it just it's just not going to happen. Like,
plus you have other sons that are being drafted in front of him as well.
Tell me that.
You know, like you got like a Tyler Lockett right there where you're like, I'm not putting Ayuk over a Tyler Lockett, you know?
I've got Lockett really high. So we've already taken care of that. And maybe that's how we can kind of transition to this next part. But before we do that, we went this whole conversation. I don't think I heard you mention Deebo Samuel at all. Like, are you just out on Deebo at this point?
Yeah, you know, I was kind of in on him in like May, and then I did that study and I was like, what am I doing? You know, I was there's a lot of players where, and I think it's fine. You know, like I have takes in May and June that end up not being the takes that I really feel are strong in July and August. And I think that's fine. And Debo's one of the, I mean, I wasn't like high on Deebo, but I drafted Deebo in places. Whereas, you know, I think that he's fine. He'll see work. I just don't think it's going to be very projectable. And I see Ayuk as a true potential like alpha in the league. And if that hits year two, great. I think that just given what we talked about, the quarterback situation and stuff and the rookie quarterback, just a little bit tougher to just bank on that. You know, year three for him could be amazing. But I just don't think Debo's that. I mean, look at how they utilized him last year too. I mean, he has his spot in this offense and he works very well in this offense and they utilize him properly in this offense. But I just, you know, he's not someone that I'm like actively and aggressively going after.
Yeah, our mutual friend Rich Rebar does a great piece every year where he talks about like all targets are not created equal. It's on Sharp Football. You should go check that out if you haven't. That's a great example of like even if Ayuk and Samuel have the same target share or something pretty close, you know, one of those guys is getting much more valuable targets than the other. So we'll leave it at that. Last thing here we'll hit on, just some guys that you were higher or lower on than expected based on your projections. Again, I'll offer up some as well, but let's be negative. We'll end on a positive note. So let's start off negativity in this section. Who are some guys that you were lower on than consensus after you went through projections? I know Brett stalked your work and pulled a few here, but you can go a different direction as well.
Yeah, so you know, one of them at first was David Montgomery, but that's one of those guys where in May I was pretty low on Montgomery versus consensus, and now I might be higher because of all the Tariq Cohen news and stuff, and the fact that Cohen seems to be not in great shape right now after that ACL tear. And that was a huge, huge reason for David Montgomery's boost last season, that he's on the field more, he's seeing a lot more work through the air. And so a guy like Montgomery, he was someone that my projections didn't like that much, but now they're totally cool with. And I'm cool with drafting him. One guy who, again, it's one of those things where I love the player. I think he's very talented, but I worry about just the situation that he's in. That's J.K. Dobbins. You know, Dobbins is someone who could realistically, you know, like an outside chance of like leading the league in rushing if things hit the right way, because the efficiency in that offense. You know, Baltimore's been top three in running back rushes over a lot since Lamar Jackson took over. They've been number one in yards per carry at the running back position. So we know that efficiency and volume is going to be there on the ground. It's just what's going to happen through the air. And I know that, you know, they're talking about utilizing J.K. Dobbins more through the air. And they did things this offseason that suggested that they want to throw the ball a little bit more. But I think that we had to pull it back a little bit. And, you know, like after they drafted Rashad Bateman, who I love. I mean, I love Rashad Bateman, the player. I just did not love the landing spot because, you know, obviously they've been a run heavy team, and people would come at me and be like, well, what if they're going to be more pass heavy because they're making all these moves to get more pass catchers on their team? And I'm like, yeah, they're probably going to be more pass heavy, but being more pass heavy from where the Ravens were is still a very run heavy team. And the difference between a guy like Bateman, who, you know, is getting bumped down because of the situation versus like AJ Brown a couple of years ago when he got drafted to a Marcus Mariota team, is that we know Lamar Jackson is going to be the starter in that Baltimore offense. Whereas we didn't know that necessarily with Marcus Mariota. And so we know that there's this like locked in, you know, pass to rush rate that's going to be very low in this Ravens offense because of Lamar Jackson. And so it's just really hard to buy into Dobbins. I mean, Dobbins' ADP has dropped, you know, since like earlier this season when the D-gens were drafting a whole lot, you know, like right after the Super Bowl and stuff, where Dobbins was like this like late second round pick. And, you know, now he's in a more reasonable spot, but he's someone that definitely jumped out as my projections not really loving him. And then I do want to make note, this is another example of like not really capturing the variance of a player. Javonte Williams. So I love Javonte Williams. Yeah, I love Javonte Williams as a player. And I think that he's a great, great target this season in fantasy drafts, like, you know, where he's being selected because the ceiling is there. But that's not going to be reflected very positively and very well in a projection, because we know that in a projection, Melvin Gordon is still going to see a decent sized workload. Whereas, you know, we could see a scenario where Melvin Gordon is the 1A to start the season. And then all of a sudden towards the second half of the season, Javonte Williams is the lead back, right? And so there's these scenarios where you're not going to capture everything with these guys. And I think that's what we're seeing with Javonte Williams in my projections. But I do think that his ceiling is high enough that it warrants, you know, a draft selection this season.
And I feel like your bookend guys there, Montgomery and Williams, are sort of narrative and sort of the hive mind of things. And almost sometimes like our expectations of things can lead to ADP fluctuating and like for example the Montgomery thing. You know, how many times have you heard over the course of this offseason, well, David Montgomery, you want to fade him this year because he's not going to finish his running back four like he did last year? Well, it's like, well, no kidding, right? Like that's why he's like a fifth round, fourth round pick,
right?
Like nobody is taking him in that range. Like you have to almost forget about what happened last year and just look at it coming into this year, right? So I think I was basically like preparing to take the same journey as you, where it's totally out on him, but now like, yeah, might be ahead of consensus on him because I still think he's getting dinged for almost like he's like getting dinged for finishing so well last year, right?
Yeah.
Like in that sort of way. And then with Javonte Williams, it's like we already at some points have priced in, at least in like sharper drafts or whatever, had priced in like the idea that, oh, he's going to usurp Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon could be like a cut candidate. But right now it's like the tenor out of Denver is, well, Melvin Gordon might legit be the starter. It's one of those situations where, like, think about a guy like Nick Chubb a few years ago. You know, he got aggressively priced up in ADP as a rookie to the point that if you had him the first few weeks when Carlos Hyde was doing his thing, you hated it. But then if you had him by the end of the year, you loved it. You know, I think Williams could be sort of, and that is really hard that is really, really hard to capture in like an accuracy of your rankings or in your projections or anything like that. Because even if you're not the guy who drafted Nick Chubb or Javonte Williams, you could be the one that reaped the benefit if you'd like just waited long enough and traded for him or picked him up off waivers or something.
Right, exactly.
And how do you give advice off a numbered list like that? I mean, give me a break. All right, so who are some guys you were higher on than expected after you went through your projections?
Yeah, you know, we already mentioned Tyler Lockett. I love Tyler Lockett this year. I think a lot of people aren't drafting. I know a lot of people aren't drafting him for this like perceived consistency thing. And look, it's true. Last season, especially, he was not consistent, but don't overrate what consistency actually means. You know, in the end, there's been a lot of studies that show that consistency doesn't really matter because you are still getting those spiked weeks anyway. You know, Tyler Lockett against Arizona literally won you that week, right? Like there's, you can't just dismiss that because it happened in 1 week. You still scored those fantasy points. And so you're getting a guy who's a polished route runner, one of the most underrated route runners in the league, probably, who is going to see a 23%, 22% at least target share in a Russell Wilson led offense. You're going to get him in the fourth round. I mean, all day. Take that all day long. And then you also, and Seattle's another situation where, you know, you have a new offensive coordinator where the assumption's being made that they're going to still be run heavy. But Shane Waldron with the Rams, I mean, for what it's worth, the Rams overall had a pretty low pass rate when he was there. But in neutral game scripts, they were actually pretty pass heavy. And so what if we see that translate a little bit for Seattle as well? And then them letting Russ cook more than what we saw during the second half of last year. So I like Tyler Lockett. And then another player who my projections seem to like a lot more than I kind of do subjectively is Adam Thielen. You know, a lot of times, you know, historically, what we would see from the fantasy community is them not baking in regression enough into, you know, next season numbers. Like, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when Ryan Tannehill broke out, when he started for Tennessee, you know, the following season last year, people weren't really, you know, he was the QB2 when he was starting for Tennessee. And then last season, people really didn't draft him close to that, even remotely close to that. And it was surprising. It was a sign that people were getting sharper, right? And so with Adam Thielen, it's a situation where he is going to regress in the touchdown column. There's no doubt about it. But even still, with that regression, he doesn't come out looking all that bad. But I'm still not aggressively targeting him just because it's kind of hard when, you know, he's 30 years old and, you know, you don't know what that, you have Justin Jefferson, who's definitely going to see a jump in target share this season because he's a stud. And so, you know, there's reasons why I'm not totally optimistic with Adam Thielen, but my projections still liked him. And then the last one that I'll call out is Brandon Cooks, who just produces year in and year out. And I know that he's in this horrific situation that you want no part of. But at the same time, he is the clear wide receiver one on that team. And you know, realistically, he could see a 25% target share in that offense and no one would blink. And so as a result of that, you know, I think my projections had him at like wide receiver 29 or something like that. And he's being drafted closer to like wide receiver 45. So, you know, I think Brandon Cooks is a really, really big value right now.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Brandon Cooks because he is like the perfect example of your projections are going to absolutely love him more than where you're going to rank him.
Right.
Because he's probably going to outkick that ranking just because of the targets that you mentioned. I am so fascinated to see Brandon Cooks this year, especially like as he hasn't really been an alpha wide receiver in a while. He's clearly the alpha there. And he's going from like quarterback heaven, quarterback paradise over his career to like the absolute stonewall situation he could possibly be in. But no, I love that you mentioned Tyler Lockett too, because like my analysis with him has basically been, like from a consistency angle, was it a bummer that he wasn't more consistent over the course of the year? Sure, I guess, even though, like you said, he won you those weeks at different times and like no one player truly loses you a week. And also, like, unless you can project him for less volume this year because he was inconsistent last year, it just really doesn't matter for coming into this year. And like, how is he going to lose any targets? Like, old Dwayne Eskridge is going to come in there and like take his job? That's not going to happen. You know, is Gerald Everett going to nip at his heels a little bit? I doubt it. So yeah, I think we are like those three guys, all really good call outs. Is like a mix of just big boring veterans that people get you know, under excited about at this time of year. Those are good. Those are good ones to call out
for sure.
All right, JJ, I appreciate the time. I appreciate you mentioning guys like Tyler Lockett, Sterling Shepard, all these like guys I want to be higher than consensus on. So this was basically just one big confirmation bias excitement parade here for me. That was great. But more importantly for the people out there, what are you working on the rest of August as we ramp up into the season that they can get excited about?
Yeah, man, I'll be publishing my shows on the Late Round podcast, which you can find anywhere podcasts can be found. And so I'll be doing those twice a week as I do in the off season. And then once the season hits, I'll be doing it four times a week. So that's really what my focus has been on.
Boom. Yeah, it's a great show. It's super quick, informative. JJ is like the master, literally, at like packing a ton of information into a quick hitting podcast. I could not recommend it enough. And I will not recommend many fantasy podcasts to you. There's a there you go. That is a good one. What I will recommend, though, is while you're waiting on those bite-sized segments from JJ there, you go check out our other non-fantasy podcast offerings here at Yahoo Sports. Charles Robinson is bringing our NFL podcast back. It's now You Pod to Win the Game. You have to check that out. You have to say the title like that. Those are the rules. I'm at @MattHarmon_BYB. That's at @LateRoundQB. Check us out on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. Dalton Del Don will be back with another episode tomorrow. Until then, we're out.